Welcome to Stories for Hope, where we're going to talk about mental health, mental illness, and suicide. And we're going to challenge the stigma that prevents people from getting the help that they need. Join us as we take a journey with those that have struggled. What did they learn about themselves and others during that time? And what was helpful and what got in the way as they gained their resiliency? Join us and let's learn together. These are Stories for Hope, and I'm your host, Cecilia Marie Roberts. So welcome back to Stories for Hope. We wanted to continue the conversation today with a focus on mental health and men and suicide in men. So welcome to the conversation, Scott McClellan. He's a local community member who's graciously agreed to come and have a conversation with me today. So welcome, Scott. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I'm in like mid-30s to like 34.
Lucky you.
Yeah. I got two daughters. They are like 5 and 3 and a wife. So we've been together for a long time too. I've gone through my share of struggles. I've made it through some tough times. And I would say I'm continuing to process and go through the world that we live in. But ultimately, I think I got through like a big part of my life and now I'm continuing to go through it now. So
sounds like you're on the other side of something big. You know, we want to focus on suicide in men. Here for Hope has been, you know, digging in a little bit with this topic over the last couple of years. We looked at the research. We reached out to local men with quite a significant survey and got some input from them on a number of questions about how much did they know about mental health and suicide, what's helpful in terms of getting support and what's not. And if we want to reach them, how do we reach them? So I'm really interested to talk to you today about your experiences to bring some of that alive in our conversation. So maybe you can start at the beginning. When do you think you first realized that maybe your mental health was, you weren't doing so well, you were struggling and that you needed to do something about it?
Now, kind of looking back on being on the other side of things, you look back and you tell about these signs. So it's like, even as a teenager, like I would have these moments of like, just where you feel like a little bit like sadness and dark and depression and, but never really talked about it for some reason. Like I never wanted to share about it, or I would isolate or just figure out like maybe school's tough or something like that. And then after work, when I got into work, like after high school, I went straight into helping at a fitness center. And there was definitely like points where I would just get so down on myself about certain things. Like it would just be like, if I was doing really well, I would be able to go, that's great. But like within 24 hours, I was like, okay, on to the next thing. And I would really, really struggle right after that. So it would be a high and then a low that kind of came right after it. But I never ever acknowledged it. I would just like, I really focused on like positive conversation and trying to be this, I don't know, like I was definitely going after goals, which I think helped. I was really into fitness, which kind of helped as well too. But I never just expressed myself. And then it wasn't until I would say mid-20s where life started to happen, where there was like more responsibility with owning a house, starting the conversation about talking about a family, that I realized like my self-worth and value for moving forward in life started to slip. And I don't know, I can't really remember, but it was like a trickle-down effect of even work, like even in my work. I help with like financing and mortgages and that. It was weird. Like I would start like drinking a little bit earlier, you know, like in the day and start using these kind of like things in my head about like, oh, work's so stressful, so I'll have a drink. And then I stopped working out as much. So I think that was kind of like the start. It was that mid-20s. Now I'm starting to take on life and there's going to be a lot more responsibilities kind of coming towards me.
It's not an unfamiliar story for me, but what's resonating about what you're saying is this idea that things are happening to us. We don't have the frame of reference for understanding what's going on. I look back now and I think, oh, there was this. And there was this sign and there was this sign. And I think, you know, a lot of the work that we do with Here for Hope is trying so hard to raise the level of awareness and understanding in the community about what exactly is mental health, you know, and obviously it's something that we experience every day. It's how we move through the world. It's, you know, what do we think? What do we feel? How do we act? How do we interpret things that are happening to us both internally and externally? And how do we respond to all those things? How do we respond to the people in the world? And it's a bit of a roller coaster, let's be real, right? It goes up and down depending on how your day is going, both internally and externally. It is a natural natural part of our health, but we do have to be aware of it. And we do have to understand when things are going south, that we pay attention. It's a common theme. These things were happening to me, but I didn't understand what was happening to me.
Yeah, there's something weird that we just like, I think we just think it will just get better. Like, I don't know what that is, but there's something like when we go through a hard day or a hard week, we just assume things will get better. And I think when we stay in that, we go, if I can just get through today, or if I can allow myself to not slip, but like not acknowledge what's happening, it will just get better. This feeling will just go away. This slump will just go away. It has before. I'm sure it has before. That's okay. So do I need to acknowledge it? No, because it will go away.
They're probably right that, you know, tomorrow will get a bit better, yeah, or something positive will happen, or you'll have a few moments of an interaction with someone who'll make you smile. That will probably happen. But overall, these, you know, the stress, you know, the hurts and the things that happen to us that have a negative impact on us, they are cumulative. And without acknowledging them and doing something about them, eventually, you know, they can cause us problems, and we can get to a situation where we're feeling overwhelmed.
When I was younger, and you would look at me like in my mid-20s or even earlier, that guy's got it. Not to say that from an ego perspective, but it's like from a career perspective, in terms of working hard, in terms of my relationship with my now wife. And then all of a sudden, when I would get alone, I would sit there and just have nothing left. But I would never ever, like, I just needed to put myself back out there the very next day. And then I would come home at nighttime and just start thinking about stuff. I got to be strong for other people. I have to keep, if I just work towards this goal, that will get better. And I think that was part of some of the things that I went through too, is just like the visual of what, or the expectation of what maybe I thought people thought of me. Mm-hmm. It was my expectation of what I thought people right. thought of me.
And do you think it's a man thing? Do you yeah. think a lot of that, you know, is really the social norms around being a man?
I think so. Like, I think there definitely is something to that, especially when we want to feel like we've got it all together. And then you start to realize, oh, okay, maybe that's not the case. No matter how many masks you put on after that, right?
And that's what I was thinking, those masks, right?
Those masks.
Put them on, dust ourselves off.
Yeah.
Out in the world we go with this understanding that to not be vulnerable is to be strong. And I always have said this so many times to folks, one of the most difficult things to do is to be vulnerable. So how did you make the switch? Like, how did you become vulnerable? What led up to that?
I was forced into it. I got so hurt and so broken down, I couldn't hide it anymore. I tried absolutely everything to make myself look presentable to people. All of a sudden, I was letting my hair grow out. I started not training as much. Not that that's wrong, but I think there were signs of
for you things, that for was me. That was a change.
And, for me,
and,
that
and
was
really
something.
Signs that something was not right.
My wife's a hairdresser, so when my hair starts to grow out, it's like
exactly
yeah. So it is
when I get quiet, people know there's something
yeah.
wrong, right?
Yeah. And I think when that starts, and there was definitely something like, you know, I was helping people with fitness and health, you know, when I would send them an update, it kept getting later and later. And so there was the sense of where people thought this guy's got it together. Now that starts to slide. And that really starts to take a toll on it to the point where it got too out of control. Like I started losing control out of too much. And that happened during COVID as well too. So the thought of losing control was really what I struggled with, is not having control of things, but it was so far gone, I couldn't put it back together. By that point, it was very obvious to more and more people. And then when it becomes more obvious to those people, you just stay away from it.
Right.
You
course.
Go, oh, if they question me on anything, I'll kick them out of my life. And when that starts happening, and then, you know, I'm not taking opportunities, and mine and my wife's relationship started getting friction, like that, it was very strange. I had our first daughter, and I was like staying in the office a little bit later. A very classic man thing is, you know, staying in the garage. Going out to the garage one too many times. Even my wife was like, why do you keep going out to the garage? And of course, I had alcohol out there, hidden alcohol, right? Just to kind of try and get through my stress. And it really did come to the point where eventually,
it's okay, take your time.
Where visually I think people were really sad for me. And I didn't know how to express myself to how much hurt there was, but I had to get myself so physically bad that I almost needed somebody. And it was to the point, like, I, yeah, it just, you know, like when visually you don't, like, I needed somebody to take me by the hand, and I really just wanted to go, I can't do this anymore. And at that point, there was so much that happened. It just felt like I needed to restart everything. And that's where I look back and I go, man, there was a lot of signs there, but I just didn't acknowledge anything.
Everyone's pathway to suicide is individual, but there are some commonalities in terms of factors that have been shown to, you know, increase people's risk. And one of them that I think is maybe a bit shocking for people is social disconnection. Now, you know, in your story, you do describe that you sort of were removing yourself, and that's, you know, very common. But there were people around you who obviously cared about you and who were able to lean in and say, hey, there's something, let me take you by the hand here. There's something not right. But for many men, they don't have that connection to people who have either the understanding or ability to see what's happening for them, or, you know, the capacity to take them by the hand. Would you agree with that? Like, do you experience that? I know maybe that's not been exactly your experience, but with other men that you know, can you see that being a huge part of, you know, of the suffering, or that adds to the suffering, not having those sort of close relationships that can wander, if I can use that word, into that sort of vulnerable emotional realm? I mean, I think we can have a lot of surface relationships.
And again, like every day I wake up and one of my goals is to check on people, not necessarily even just close friends, but if somebody pops in my head, I take that as a clear nudge. And sometimes that nudge is right. And a lot of the times, if somebody doesn't have that hand, eventually that self-worth just gets so eliminated. Like, well, if I don't care about myself and nobody else cares about myself or about me, life is difficult. And that conversation, when it gets to that point, I mean, you got to be very aware of, if you start thinking like that, life is so hard, I might rather not want to do it. That's concerning. And especially if you don't have somebody around to try to uplift you, the moment that kind of comes in your head, you should really start thinking about, whoa, what's going on here? Because that conversation could be slow, could be fast. Whatever it looks like long term, you don't deserve to have that conversation. You are worth so much more to yourself and into the community around you. If that's coming in your mind, you got to start talking. You need to.
I think it's true that we are who we are in reflection of the people around us.
Yes.
Right? And so when we don't have a lot of people around us and our own thought patterns start to get very negative, then we're reflecting that back, right?
Yeah.
And so yes, those moments of kindness, those moments of genuine connection, a laugh, a hey, do you want to come with us? They do mean a lot. And I think we underestimate the humanness.
I was going to say that the human part of us will, like, there's something inside us that has good.
This sense of value that we bring to the world, you know, is often just, people lose sight of it and lose the ability to see it, right? which is, I think, where our connections with people come in, for sure. The other thing that came up in the literature were things like stressful life events, such as unemployment and relationship breakdown. And, you know, I think those are two things for men that can be very difficult. They come with huge hits to our self-esteem and our sense of who we are in the world. But there's also a lot of grief and loss associated with both of those two things. I think people underestimate how difficult those things are, particularly for men. Is that sort of something that you've, you know, again, seen either in your own experiences or with others?
For me personally, absolutely. Especially during COVID, there was a lot of, again, not being in control of things, just really, like, I took it so personal. Like, I always thought, oh, I have control of this. And if something's not going right, that means that I'm screwing it up. And that for me was like trying to understand that, hey, man, maybe you weren't part of that circumstance. Like, maybe it wasn't your fault. Maybe what happened wasn't a result of who you were or what you were trying to do or how hard you worked. Maybe it just sucks. Like, maybe it just happened.
You know, I'm curious about the other things along your journey that were helpful for you. I mean, it really sounds like your connection to the people that you love was an anchor for you and, you know, kind of facilitated maybe you moving into this journey of understanding and healing. But what other kinds of supports did you seek that you found helpful, or maybe things that you saw it that weren't helpful. I'd be curious about that as well.
Yeah. So I ended up being kind of to the point where my family was really struggling with like, holy moly, what do we do? Situations happen where I always say, I'm not sure if the family is supposed to know what to do. Either my wife or my mom or my brother. And they're just, I know they're trying their best, but they didn't plan for that. But it got to the point where I needed professional help. And my view on that changed completely where like therapy now and counseling, I recommend it so much to everybody. And so professional help, like your therapy, your counseling, 100% I would recommend it. And it will feel like, I remember sitting down with a counselor and we just were talking and it was strange. It was uncomfortable for me, but that's the point. You're not supposed to know what to expect. And it's okay if you don't. You're going through this the first time. You're not supposed to know what's going to happen. You're not supposed to know the feelings that pop up. This is the point, is to start figuring this out and start the healing process. So the therapy, the counseling, and then the community as well too. I started to really try to surround myself with people who maybe understood my story a little bit better, where I could call them and just be like, my day looks like this. And by the end of the conversation, it wasn't that they needed to go to my wife. It wasn't that bad. Like it was me needing to just vent and talk about my day. But they knew that I just needed to do that. You know, I had like counseling once a week. I would get into small groups once or twice a week. I would go to church on Sundays. I would go to another men's small group. Like I really was like, okay, I got to solve.
You were ready.
Oh, like, and I totally humbled myself to go, I understand I got to start healing. Now I have my place at certain ones. Like I tried a lot of different things and I kept the ones that stuck around. And then I'll always have this, like the professional help. I will always keep that in mind even further. Like I'm much more honest about my capacity to handle stuff now. I would go directly to professional help very quick.
You tried a bunch of things and then you found the ones that work for you. I think this is a barrier for a lot of people when they first get to that point, whether they figure that out on their own or somebody takes them by the hand to get some professional support. You know, they maybe go and try one or two things. It feels really uncomfortable. Guess what? It is. It's new. It's going to feel uncomfortable. They're like, oh, yeah, no, that doesn't work for me. I have so many people that will say, no, I try counseling. It doesn't work for me. So I always want to sort of gently go back to that and say, you know, the probably the most significant ingredient to the success of the counseling is the connection that you make with that person on the other side of the room. And you may have to talk to a few people a few times. You may have to go to group 4 or 5 times before you decide, yeah, that comfort, that connection is there, or I need to move on to perhaps somebody else as well, which is fine. The other thing that you said, and I want to say it before I lose it, you said, I knew that I needed to do some healing.
Yeah.
As opposed to, and again, I hear this from people, I need to get fixed. You know, people are not broken. They need to be healed. And that's very different. Things like connection and community and treatment of some sort can all be tools that we use in that healing process. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the importance of our tribe, of our people. Yep. We talked about the importance of ourselves, right? Being aware and understanding what's going on with us and be careful of the messages that we're sending and having the capacity to put up our hand when we think things are going wrong. I think this is where a lot of men struggle. I think it's really hard to say, I'm not doing okay. And I have said for years that, you know, we tell people that are in crisis, oh, just reach out, reach out, reach out. How about we change that narrative to how about we reach in? So that requires us to be on the lookout. And it sounds like you very much are like that with your folks in your life, to be on the lookout for opportunities to lift them up, but also for opportunities to see that maybe they're not doing okay. And then reach in and say, hey, how you doing? I'm really curious from the perspective of a man, what does that look like? What is it that someone could say to you that would open that conversation up?
There's two things I always say, like when people say, reach out if you need anything, that's so difficult for us. I always said a phone number is the hardest thing. Like, okay, I got this phone number here. But then I have to tell the person, like, I got to pick up their phone. I'm not sure if I want to bother them. And then, like, that's difficult, or I don't necessarily know the other person. Or again, what if this gets solved by tomorrow type of thing? A lot of the times that, how are you? another one. Sorry, I get emotional over this, but it's, you know, if any guys are understand what it means to when we say, how are you? And they go silent. Or, you know, I think the biggest thing is like, oh, I'm just tired. Like, and I mean, not that physical tired. I'm not talking after a long shift. I understand, boys. Like, I understand, like, when we're saying, how are you? And you're looking down and you go, I'm good. I'm all right. Loud and clear. Loud and clear to me. When you say you're tired, loud and clear to me. And I love telling my story so that guys can go, oh, you felt that too. You were tired too. You said you were just all right. You didn't want to talk about your emotions. We have to start understanding that the conversation needs to happen, not just for ourselves, but for our brothers as well too. Men, there is help. You got to be vulnerable enough to, you got to reach out. You may not have anybody understand what you're going through, like around you, but that you can't allow that to stop you.
And I think, you know, when we talk about, and I know, you know, we're talking a broad conversation here about mental health and suicide, but when we talk about suicide, we talk about it as a whole of community approach. Yeah. You know, everyone has a role to play. Asking someone if they were thinking about suicide, as frightening as that is to get those words out for us who are asking the question, it is one of the greatest gifts that you can give to the person that you're asking, because it's so very difficult for them to say, yeah, I'm not doing well, I'm thinking about suicide. You know, the quality of our check-ins with people matter, and our ability to create, as you said, sort of trust, but also the ability to go as deep into the conversation as we need to go to really, really understand, you know, the depth of how okay and how tired, you know, that man is an important skill to have. And, you know, more and more and more and more, we want arm people in the community with those skills.
Something I didn't understand was that I would, at certain times, I felt vulnerable enough to tell a bit of my story to somebody who didn't have the capacity to take that information and give me back what I needed at that time too. It's difficult because it's not that they didn't care, and you can't reflect that back onto yourself. And don't let that stop you from continuing to ask.
Exactly. People can't always be what we need them to be when we need them to be that. Understanding that, you know, your tribe, so to speak, the people that are your support system, they have different roles. And those roles are based on their capacity. And, you know, sometimes we really want our partner to be our be all and end all. But guess what? It's actually going to be our buddy or our mother or our father's best friend. We have to be open to that. I wanted to just finish up the conversation maybe by asking you about where you are now. What do you think will help you to continue on your journey?
I'm doing well. I'm doing great. Like, I would say, if I could tell anybody, I'm really enjoying life. It doesn't mean that everything's perfect. It doesn't mean my relationships are perfect. Really, what I've done is I prioritize the things that make me happy in life. And I've really started to put my value into the things that give me value back. I really try to focus on filling my cup. So I always go, if I haven't worked out in like a while, I better do it. If I haven't been to church, or if I haven't been connecting with my community, I better be doing it. Like, I have these non-negotiables that I can allow a little bit of wiggle room, but not a lot, because there's another side of me that still goes, I know I'm human. I've healed a lot. I want to be there for as many people as I can. I want to put value in what I think is valuable to this world, but also that doesn't make me invincible. So I need to make sure that every single day I do check up on myself and I go, how are you feeling? And what do we need to do to get you back to where you need to be? And some days that means staying at home on the couch. Some days that means going out and working out. Some days that means going out with the family and having this like barrier, this capacity to like handle my own stuff. I always have my outlets for if I do need help though. So there's certainly people that I trust that I go, there's professional help. I know my doctor, I can call them. I know my counselor would be there. I know I have other connections that are going to be there for me if I need them. And that for me is important. I'm not invincible.
Sounds to me like you have control of your life, but also recognize that you're not always in control of everything in your life.
That's exactly. I have control.
I think that's called wisdom, Scott. That is,
you know what?
I think it's wisdom.
I call it, mine was like stubborn wisdom. I go, oh, I love this so much that I wouldn't change anything because of how I feel today. I think that's important. I love being here. I wouldn't change anything. I value my space in this world. And it's not because there's anything special about me. Everybody has this ability to feel like this. If anyone's hurting, who's listening, who's anyone who's in anyone who's tired, this isn't a me thing. This can be a you thing as well too. Take the steps. This is possible. You can feel this. And it's not perfect, but absolutely it's worth living for.
And that's hope.
That's hope. That's hope,
Scott,
right there.
Scott, thank you so much for the conversation. You.